This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Lots to talk about as we welcome you into this Monday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni, we're coming to you from coast to coast as always. Michael out there at his office in Jersey. I'm live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. In about 15 minutes, Jim Nagy, executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, is going to join us, talk through some of these NFL prospects as the draft is upon us later on this month. We're going to have some people step into the office of Michael Lombardi a little bit later on in the program, but we're going to start talking college hoops, Michael, because even though we flipped the calendar, madness of March is still coming in, and that Final Four is set.
It's here. I mean, anybody who had North Carolina State on their dance card, God bless you. That was awesome. I mean, look, they do not look like an 11 seed. I think to me, the way they just dominated Duke in the second half and just imposed their will on Duke. I thought that Duke kind of shriveled up and just didn't want any part of it. I thought they were just – they wore them down. And having Duke beat them by 17, 18 points earlier in the season. But this NC State team peaked at the right time, and it's hard to predict. And Purdue, I think they were grinding it out against Tennessee, right? Eddie was able to make the free throws down the stretch they needed. You know, they threw the ball in the post anytime they needed a basket to stop Tennessee's runs. I thought it was two great games, Stormy, yesterday. It was a fun watch all day, didn't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this tournament has been so fun, and I love the way that the Final Four has played out because we do have some of those marquee names. We have the juggernaut in UConn. We have the Purdue storyline of them getting knocked out in the first round a season ago. They've punched their ticket to the Final Four for the first time since 1980. Can Matt Painter continue to quiet the noise? We've got a Cinderella in NC State. And then I joked about it earlier, Alabama's supposed to be a football school, but look out the way that they have come on and put on a masterful offensive performance. Numerous times throughout the course of the season, they got bumped out early in the tournament last year from San Diego State, had an off shooting day, and they came back with a vengeance. So I'm really, really excited for this group. But we still have to say the spreads for these final four games are large and for a reason, because these two top seeds are so dang good. We have UConn laying 12 now in this spot, Purdue laying 9. But the favorites have been cashing in left and right throughout the course of this tournament, Michael. Favorites of 9 points or more are 15-4 against the spread in this tournament. So can these teams continue to do that?
Yeah, I mean, so you're telling me what you saw, that what NC State did to Duke is a fluke? They were a 7-point dog and won the game handily going away. And so now they come back. To me, it seems the 9 seems way too much. Okay. It really does. I'd be surprised if it didn't move a little bit back towards, you know, away from the 9 and down to 8, 8.5, you know, because I think to me, you have to go with what you saw last, right? I know that they're an 11 seed, but they don't play like an 11. Ask Duke if they're an 11 seed, right? I mean, they're good. They can get the ball in the post. Their guards are good. They can shoot. You know, they can stop runs because they get the ball in the big fella and he can make a shot. You know, you don't even think he's going to get off the ground and he ends up getting over everybody. They match up to Purdue. They've got size to match up with Purdue. I thought Middlebrook's coming off the bench yesterday. I mean, he gave them, you know, offensive rebounding toughness. He'll give them 5 more fouls. I mean, the thing is, when you're playing against Connecticut or you're playing against Purdue, you got to guard without fouling.
Right.
Because what happens is you get to the free throw line. I mean, what was – I think Purdue was at the free throw line with 11, 12 minutes to go in the game. And they were – it was plus – they were in the bonus.
Well, and that's,
I mean, that's like stealing.
Michael, that's why the officiating is going to be so interesting to see how this plays out. Zach Edey got to the line, took 22 foul shots in that game, made 14 of them. But, I mean, the way that you have to play him is tough. So that battle down low is going to be really interesting with Zach Edey, who's the best player in college basketball, taking on. We talk about NC State being a Cinderella, but as far as players go, the most lovable favorite player of the entire tournament seems to be DJ Barnes, who the biggest lie this April Fool's Day, by the way, Michael, is that he's listed as 6'9", 275. Come on now.
Yeah, come on. I mean, I don't know how he gets up and down the court, but I would argue that the best player in college basketball is DJ because I thought Klingon was the most dominant player of the weekend. I don't know what Tennessee was thinking, but for some, what Illinois was thinking going after him. He blocked every single shot. It looked like he was playing with an 8-foot hoop and everybody else was playing with a 10-foot hoop. He was just, you know, it was unbelievable. Like, and the fact that then when I looked it up, he only averages 20 minutes a game. Stormy, he's 20 minutes a game playtime guy. Can you imagine that? That's how good they are at UConn. They only need him for 20 minutes.
Rest up. Keep those bodies nice and healthy for the run that you're trying to make, which Elliot did some great digging here. I mean, I guess it's not digging, but research that I didn't have to do. So I very much so appreciate it, Elliot. Laying out these teams in the Final Four. For Alabama, it's their first ever appearance. Purdue, their first appearance since 1980. NC State, their first since 83. Meanwhile, for UConn, it's their seventh since 1999. One of these things is not like the other. And we talk about their dominance that they have had, 10-0 straight up and against the spread, winning by an average margin of 23.1 points since the start of last year's tournament. Now, the one thing that could be working against them, though, Michael, that I'm curious your thoughts on. The largest Final Four or title game favorites over the last 50 years. Gonzaga laid 14.5 against UCLA in 2021. They only won by 3. Kentucky laid 14 against Syracuse in 96. Didn't cover, still won by 9. NC State laid 12 against Marquette in 74. It was a push, but they won. And Duke minus 11.5 against Michigan State in 1999. Another no cover. They won by 6. So these big spreads in the biggest games in the history of the tournament. 4-0 straight up, they win the game, but 0-3-1 ATS. Can the Huskies buck the trend? Can they win and cover the big number in the Final Four?
Well, I mean, look, we heard what Thomas Gable said in the last hour. He would make the line if it's Connecticut against Purdue at 4.5. So that, to me, kind of evens it up. That's the kind of game we want to see. But I don't know if there's another team remaining. Obviously, Alabama's going to find out what they're like in their first round. And then NC State. I mean, look, give NC State credit now. Sure. They haven't blinked. They haven't backed down. They think they're good. Confidence runs rampant through their team. And you and I both know confidence is a great motivating tool. They believe in themselves. I saw it yesterday watching that game. There was no way that Duke was going to rise above that. Like, they beat Duke with their will. Like, they just imposed their will on Duke. And whether it's because they're the older team and Duke isn't, I don't know. But to me, I felt like they were just like Connecticut imposed their will on that team. Now, Purdue's got older players. They understand it. I thought they handled their poise, their presence against a very good Tennessee team. You know, especially with Dalton Kennard making all those incredible. I mean, was he unbelievable or what, Stormy? All I kept shaking my head every time he hit a three from anywhere was, this guy's playing at Northern Colorado last year. Think about that.
If only his supporting cast could help him out. He puts up 37. Nobody else has double digits in the game. Like, he just couldn't get the scoring support from anywhere else on the court. Yeah, Connect was fantastic. 14 of 31 from the floor, 37 points, 6 of 12 from beyond the arc, and did a great job when he was put in the situation at the foul line. Obviously, though, they do not get out of it in advance. You talk about UConn's dominance. They have been the favorite to repeat as national champions since the odds came out at the end of last season, plus 360. They're now $2 to win it all, so paying a hefty tax, that's the expectation for them to win. Purdue followed them up at plus 205. NC State and Alabama both 16-1 to win it all. But yeah. NC State, Michael, this was a team that was 181-201 just to make the Final Four, and they're in this position. It's really remarkable. It's really special what they've done. Also, real quickly,
they were sandwiched between Stormy. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh no, I was just going to say that the outstanding player odds as well, just to double down on UConn. Four of the top five players in the most outstanding player odds for the tournament are all UConn players. So, like, it's just the expectation is that it's going to be UConn again. But say what you're going to say about NC State.
Well, I mean, NC State's, when you look at the KenPom, they're sandwiched between Indiana State, who doesn't make the tournament, and TCU, who's a ninth seed. And they're put right there at 43. And so, you know, whereas this is what I do know, having watched Duke against, and I think NC State got a huge break when she got hurt, because I think Houston beats Duke. I really do. If he stays healthy, they're going to win that game. Okay. And then maybe they beat NC State because, you know, that knocked them out of it. It really did. And I think you got to give them credit for, you know, for Duke being able to take advantage. But Duke looked nothing like the team. They looked like a 4 seed playing against a 1 seed last night.
Michael, I know it's April Fool's Day and we've had a lot of fun joking around about that, but something that's not a joke and we wish it was, that we do want to acknowledge the news coming out over the last hour, heartbreaking loss in our NFL world, that Vontae Davis reports that he was found at his home dead at the young age of just 35 years old, former star cornerback, first round pick. Just devastating news to learn this morning.
Yeah, really sad news. Too young to die. The brother of the 49er tight end. And it's really sad, you know, that this happens at such a young age. And, you know, I feel badly for their family and our condolences to everyone.
Yeah, they, at least according to the reports that I have seen so far, they believe there's no foul play involved. Not a lot of information has come out, but obviously our condolences, as Michael referenced, and all over Twitter, a lot of great memories being shared already about him, but way too soon. Hate to see anything like that happen. We're going to have to take a quick break here. When we return on the Lombardi Line, more football talk. Jim Nagy, executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, is going to join us. We still have to come. Who's stepping into the office today, which you've got a nice list, mind you. And this is a massive day for women's college basketball as well. Who will advance and punch their tickets to the Final Four? We will be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonatoni with you. Pro days for all the major draft candidates are in the books, and somebody who knows these guys intimately, sees them up close and personal throughout the process, joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Jim Nagy, executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, 18-year scout. And Jim, before we get into these prospects, you've been watching the NCAA tournament just like the rest of America and tweeted over the weekend, anyone else having trouble watching NC State big man DJ Burns and not thinking about him kick sliding and pass pro or getting out on poles? Because it can't just be me. And we have been saying all postseason, this guy got mixed up in the sports he decided to play in college, Jim.
Yeah, Stormy, good to be on with you and Mike again. Yeah, I mean, it's a natural for a football person when you're watching basketball, and I don't watch a lot of basketball outside March Madness. So that was my first introduction to this big guy, and you know, he's nimble and he's got a soft touch, and so I'm just thinking, geez, it'd be nice to work this guy out. Now, you know, you don't know if he played high school football. I mean, when you look at the guys that have converted and been successful, like Antonio Gates was a good high school football player. You know, so you don't know that. You don't know the background. You don't know what he's like in the weight room. I mean, there's certainly things you don't know about. But you're curious. Like, let's put him through an offensive line workout or a tight end workout, and let him see if he can catch the ball. So no, that's just where a football guy's brain goes. I'm sure Mike's brain went there too. And then as soon as I posted that the other night, I tweeted this out today. I had 3 guys from the league hit me up. They're like, yeah, we think the same thing. We'd love to work this guy out. And then right before I jumped on, I was grabbing some lunch here down the street from our Senior Bowl offices. And I had one of the scouts that scouts that part of the country for an AFC team was like, dude, you are killing me with these DJ Burns posts, because that was my plan. Was he was hoping, his hope was that NC State got knocked out in the first round, and he was going to, and he lives there. He lives in the research triangle there in North Carolina. He was going to slide in and work out DJ by himself. He's like, well, you've blown that up, man. But no. So it's awesome. Again, I'm not saying the guy can play in the NFL, but I think every football person is curious, like, what would that look like?
Yeah, no question. You know, and I mean, if he were a little bit better shape and he ran faster, you might think tight end. His hands are so damn soft. You know, you think he'd be good. But, you know, I don't know. Lining up and getting that foot kicked out requires a lot of toughness. I don't know if those guys actually have it. And you know, what happens if he gets drafted or he goes over to Europe and gets guaranteed money? That can always deter you from taking the path in the NFL. But all right, let's go back to the quarterbacks, the subject at hand. So I said on my podcast today that I think Michael Penix, when the medicals start to come out and he gets cleared up, he will move up the board a little bit because of his workout and how fast he ran. Have you heard the same thing, that Michael Penix is kind of being looked at in a different light based on the workout?
Yeah, Mike, I'll say this. When I was in Baton Rouge last week, I stayed at the same hotel as, I mean, shoot, the entire Patriots brass was there, you know, Elliot Wolf and Gerard Mayo and Adam Peters and Dan Quinn were there. And we were all down in the lobby one night just talking about these guys. And again, I said, is Penix going in the first round or not? And it was really split. There was, you know, three or four guys that were convicted. Yeah, Jimmy's, he's definitely going to go in the first. And then a couple of others like, nah, he's probably more of a second. So I think it's pretty split, Mike. I think where it comes down on Penix is that, and you know this, I mean, usually the medical stuff doesn't get out in the media into the fans. I mean, but Michael's medical stuff has been so, you know, highly publicized. I think people have just knocked him for it. You know, I think the media's knocked him down for it. I think that the, you know, the fans on Twitter have, you know, on social media have knocked him down for it. So yeah, but a clean bill of health. I was just watching him today. I went back and watched Indiana tape to see if that Indiana tape looked any different. He's such a good thrower of the football, and I've said it, and Mike, you can disagree. I mean, you worked with this man and you were really close to Al Davis. I've always, if Al Davis were still here, He would be the Raiders' first round pick, would he not? You know, with that vertical throwing. But
I said it on the pod today, Jim.
Yeah, I mean,
Jim,
yeah,
I said I mean, it on the I pod never, today. I mean,
I love it. I love it.
I mean, he to
I
me,
do, Mike.
if they really
go ahead, Michael.
Go ahead. Well, if
no,
they
you
really
got it, Mike,
believe that they understand the Raider tradition, if they really believe they have the Raider tradition and understand it, Penix is the guy. Penix is the guy because Al wanted to run over routes, vertical routes, third level routes, and he wanted a quarterback who could run. And Al didn't mind left-handed quarterbacks. Some coaches mind it, right? They don't want it.
Yep.
You know, Al had Kenny Stabler, he had Todd Marinovich. He doesn't mind. He didn't mind it. So it's going to be fascinating to see how they rank him.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I do think a clean medical will help him for sure.
And Jim, you mentioned being out there in Baton Rouge, so you got to see Jaden Daniels and the LSU Pro Day up close and personal. What were some of your big takeaways from him and the way that he's catapulted in so many scouts and analysts' minds over recent weeks?
Yeah, I've been watching Jaden for a long time now, so this was kind of close the book for me with Jaden. He's just an easy thrower of the football. You hear people say the ball jumps off a guy's hand. I kind of chuckle when people say that's a pretty overused term. But I mean, the ball just comes off his hand so clean with such good velocity. He struggled a little bit in the early part of the workout on a couple of deep balls he missed. But again, not a big deal. I thought it was a really good throwing session. I was actually standing with the GM who's been at, he was at Caleb Williams and JJ McCarthy's. And I said, okay, where do those three rank? And they were going to Drake May's the next day. The next day, Penix and May had theirs. And this GM said McCarthy 1, Jaden 2, and Caleb Williams 3 was his rank, and he was at all three of those.
Wow.
Wow, that's impressive. Hey, all right, so you're at LSU's workout. Neighbors, what's your read? Would a team take Neighbors ahead of Harrison?
Ooh. You know, you got to love that Malik did everything, right, Mike? I mean, I think you and I are probably both kind of old school. We probably got to get with this new wave of guys opting out of doing everything. And I'm not taking any shots at Marvin Harrison. I mean, and I don't think the league is really taking a hard stance over it either. But the fact that Neighbors went out there, and not only did he run 140, he ran 740. A lot of guys aren't doing right now. I would throw a Dunsey in there too. Like, to me, this isn't a two-horse race. To me, I think it's a three-horse race. I'm a huge Roma Dunsey fan, so I think it could happen. We'll see. I mean, I do think there's going to be a run on those quarterbacks. I would love to be in the L.A. Chargers seat right now, Joe Ortiz in his first draft, because I think that he's going to control a lot. I think they're going to get a king's ransom for that fifth pick. And Monty Austin Ford sitting there at Arizona at 4. I mean, you know, Mike, you've been in that GM chair. I think both those guys are sitting pretty when it comes to either, you know, stay put and take a really good wide receiver or, trade out for one of these quarterbacks in stockpile picks. But all three of those top receivers are legit.
And Jim, because you mentioned where J.J. McCarthy ranked in that one executive that you spoke to and where the Chargers sit at the opportunity, his former head coach in Jim Harbaugh has been ranting and raving about how J.J. McCarthy, the best pro day that I've ever seen for a quarterback. He's the top tier, top of this class, XYZ. Where does J.J. McCarthy rank in your mind? Because you have these people that view him one way, is now a top four pick, top two pick in a lot of senses for some folks out there, and then others that are saying, what are we missing because we haven't gotten to see XYZ on the field during his collegiate career?
I'll start by saying Coach Harbaugh, and I love him, but he's in a perfect position right now with sitting there with Justin Herbert. So he can say these things about J.J. McCarthy, and he doesn't have to put his money where his mouth is. So this whole thing worked out perfectly for Coach Harbaugh. But J.J. is probably the guy that I spent the least amount of time studying. I actually, when they finished up the national championship game, I reached out to Coach Harbaugh. He connected me with J.J.'s dad, because we tried to get him in the Senior Bowl. We could bring juniors to the game this year for the first time ever. And they just played so much. His dad was like, Jim, he's just played 15 games. I think we're good. So I didn't spend as much time. I do know, and I went to Michigan, so I have watched a lot of J.J. I'm not trying to dodge the question. He has a really elastic arm. He can throw it on the move. He's a really good athlete. I wish he would have run. I wish all these quarterbacks would have run. Because again, like, I think Bo Nix would have run well. I think J.J. would have run well. There at the Baton Rouge Pro Day. I mean, I had people in the building telling me that Jaden Daniels would have run with Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas, and both those guys touched in the 4.3s. So I wish these quarterbacks would have done that. It would have been fun to see where they all came out. But no, it just feels like J.J. is, there's so much late buzz on him. You know, it's not like J.J. is an unknown guy. Everyone's known about J.J. This guy isn't like a Johnny come lately. So it just feels a little weird. But we'll see. I don't know if it's the Jim Harbaugh stuff or not, but those other three guys were kind of settled in those top three spots, and there's certainly been a late push for J.J.
Jim, I have 50 more questions, but we have to hit a commercial break, unfortunately. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, thanks.
Great job.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again. See you, Mike.
Always enjoy getting to hear some of that insight from Jim Nagy, again, executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl. I did, Michael. I'm sorry. I know we had more, but the music comes in, and it says we got to go.
I know. It just showed up quick. That was quick. I know.
Heartbreaking.
I love that he recognized Al Davis. I love that. He knew that one there.
He was echoing all of those thoughts that you had with Michael Penix Jr. in that connection. We'll be right back. Step into Michael's office coming up next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here with the Lombardi Line on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. And for a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free when you sign up at VSIN.com/splits. The VSIN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all of the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion for not just today, but future events as well. Take advantage. This is a limited time offer. VSIN.com/splits. Visit the page now to claim your free 2 week access to VSIN's betting splits.
The appointments are lined up.
You waiting for somebody in there?
Got an appointment.
And it's not about what you want to hear, but what you need to hear.
It's not personal. It's strictly business.
It's time you and me had a private talk winger. Step into my office.
And step into my office with Michael Lombardi. Mr. Lombardi, we'll see you now.
Starting off with an oldie but a goodie, because Robert Saleh, it's been far too long since you've stepped into the office of Mr. Michael Lombardi. Michael, as we mentioned over the weekend.
Me? He's worn the carpet out coming over here. Are you kidding me?
It's he was in need of an appointment. It's been too long, Michael. It's been too long. And we mentioned that over the weekend, the Jets made another signing. They bring in Hassan Reddick from the Eagles. He is one of many veteran signings that they have made, many of which have had a lot of health concerns, injury issues in the past. There's also a lot of questions about the coaching staff when it comes to this team. But in terms of controllables, Michael, for Robert Saleh, what does he need to focus on to make the most of this offseason and the group of talent that they have acquired?
I think what, Robert, you have to do is find a way to balance getting your team ready to play and not overworking your team. I think it's going to be really important. I think last year you kind of thought it was all going to come together. And Woody Johnson was talking about wanting to get more of you as a head coach, not a defensive coordinator. And I think ultimately that's going to be your role here, is to figure out how to get everybody not healthy for opening day. Not that. When everybody is together at the end of the year. I think use NC State as the perfect example. How can we peak at the right time? Because you're going to have a lot of rust on you. The quarterback's going to be rusty. We know he's not going to play in the preseason. He's going to have minicamp. We understand that Mike Williams is rehabbing. He's going to take time. You certainly don't want to waste Tyron Smith in a preseason game or Morgan Moses. So I think you've got to take September and use it as kind of an extension of the preseason and really do a good job of figuring out how to balance getting ready, not for the opener, but getting ready for the stretch run and getting your team the reps it needs.
Yeah, what I'm most excited to see with this team is if that upgraded offensive line and Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses, if they can stay healthy and protect the quarterback, because that was, I mean, the offensive line play and the injuries that they sustained throughout the course of the season, it was abysmal. It was brutal. Sitting right now, win total 9.5. They're plus 220 in the division, 22-1 in what feels like a Super Bowl or bust season, oddly enough, despite the year that they are coming off of. How about Jamal Shedd, guard for Houston? He's stepping into the office. Consensus first team All-American year. Led Houston to a top seed, Sweet 16. He ends up going down with a sprained ankle in the first half of their last game of the season, falls apart against Duke. What advice would you give Jamal Shedd as he heads to the NBA after this disappointing ending to his illustrious collegiate career?
You know, I think ultimately every setback obviously opportunity for a comeback. And I think everybody recognizes, from every coach you played against, from Buzz Williams to everybody, to your own coach, Kelvin Sampson, about how good of a player you are and how your work ethic and how your ability to defend anybody on the court, that's going to separate you in every single draft. That's going to separate you from everybody as you move forward. So, you know, it's unfortunate you sprained your ankle and you couldn't have beaten Duke, because you and I both know you would have beaten Duke. There's no question. Your mental toughness would have carried you over the Duke Blue Devils. But that's behind you. And all you can do is control on what you control. Get healthy, get in the best shape you can, get ready for the NBA draft, and just show the people in the world that you can do this on a higher level, which everyone knows you can.
Someone else who needs to get healthy, Daniel Jones, coming off a serious knee injury, has had neck issues as well. And despite signing a 4-year, $160 million deal with the Giants a season ago, the Giants are talking about potentially taking a quarterback in the top 10, not putting a kibosh on the potential of trading up as well to get their guy if they fall in love with somebody. If you're Daniel Jones, how should you be approaching this time of year and trying to live up to that contract that they believed in you enough to sign last year?
Well, I think the number one thing you have to do, Daniel, is get healthy. That's one. Two, you've got to win back your teammates. You got to get the confidence in you. And you can only do that by controlling what you control. Work hard, prepare hard, and then you're going to have to make some critical plays or critical moments in the game, because there's doubt within that building. There's severe doubt that's placed on you, whether it's right or wrong, it's there. There's doubt whether they can win with you playing quarterback. The doubt comes from the coaches to the players. And somehow you're going to have to erase that doubt. And the only way you erase that doubt is by leading your team in the fourth quarter, by making plays on third down, by helping your team win. Because right now you're looked upon as the guy that they signed before Saquon. And as Saquon has a career in Philadelphia, you're going to have to magnify your career in New York to match it. Because everyone's going to keep saying, well, you know, we have Daniel, but we don't have Saquon. And that's not your fault. That's John Mara's fault. So you can only control what you control. And you're going to have to make plays and remove the doubt. And it's not going to be easy. You're going to have to be mentally tough, and you're going to have to be mentally strong to handle this, because you're going to throw some incomplete passes. You're going to make some mistakes. You're just going to have to battle through it. But the one thing you can't do is look over your shoulder. That will do you no good. All you can do is control what you control.
Before getting knocked out of the season in his sixth game of the year, two touchdowns, 6 interceptions for Daniel Jones. So we'll see if he can get healthy and get right on the football field. Let's go to DJ Burns as we return to college basketball. Everybody's favorite player in 2024. He had 29 points in 29 minutes against Duke to send NC State to the Final Four for the first time since 1983. But this regular season for this team was mediocre, 17 and 14. They are not power rated highly, yet have won 9 straight games. How should Burns attack Purdue's Zach Edey in the Final Four with the big men going at it down low?
Well, I think you got to take the game to him, right? You know, you're going to have to be as physical and match him physicality. You're going to have to stay out of foul trouble, right? You're going to have to be on the court. You can't win this game with you sitting next to coach. You're going to have to be on the court. You're going to have to play. And I think you're going to have to use your physicality. You're going to have to make him work, right? You got to make him be tired. And we saw stretches yesterday, and you watched the game closely, where when Eddie was running up and down the court, he would get tired. I mean, big men get tired quicker than the little guys do. You know, he's moving that big body up and down the court. And that's when you got to take advantage of it. You got to have to fight this battle like a true boxing match. You're going to have to pick your spots, back off, pick your spots, come back, but make them work. And you got to do everything in your power to stay out of foul trouble because they're going to come right after you. They're going to try to get you in foul trouble. That's going to be all Painter talks about is how can we get the big fella in foul trouble, right? How can we get Burns in foul trouble to make the mistakes? And I think ultimately you've got to understand that doesn't mean you are just going to walk away and not have contact, but you got to be really smart. You can't have dumb fouls like we saw PJ Hall get on a loose ball. You got to be really smart. And because in the last 8 minutes of the game, if Purdue is going to be able to beat you, it's going to be because you're not on the court.
NC State, the first school in NCAA tournament history with 14-plus losses in the regular season to reach a Final Four. Go Pack, go. But let's turn the tables and go to Zach Edey then as he steps into the office. Michael, a 2-time National Player of the Year, had 40 and 16 against Tennessee, sending the Boilermakers to their first Final Four since 1980. What does Edey need to do to close things out strong with all of the expectations that are on this team to have success?
I think, Edey, you need to be in the right block of the court, right? I think you're a better player when they feed you the ball as it's coming into your right hand and you can move to your left, which allows your right hand to shine. And then I think you've got to work on free throws because they're going to keep hacking you and you're going to keep going to the line and you're going to have a great day shoot. You can't have an air ball in the last 4 minutes of the game like you did yesterday. You can't have that. We can't have that. They're going to foul you. If we're going to win the game against NC State or even against Connecticut, if we're fortunate enough to get there, it's going to be because you're really good at the line and we're cashing in on the fouls that get accumulated up on you. So to me, this is when you're playing in these kind of games, it's not about doing something different. It's about doing what you do best. You're best when you get the ball on the right block. You're best when you can create fouls, and you're really good when you go the line. And I think ultimately those are the three things you have to continue to work on and continue to be a physical presence inside.
22 free throw attempts against Tennessee. And after that Elite Eight win, he said in the post game, "They thought they knew us, man. They thought they knew what we had in our hearts. They didn't. We're bleeping winners." Let's see if they can pull a Virginia. We know in 2018, they get knocked out the first round of the tournament, go on to win the national championship after all is said and done. Can Purdue do the same after the devastation that was that loss against Fairleigh Dickinson a year ago? We will be right back when we return on the Lombardi Line. Looking at Michael and I's Final Four selections, how have they turned out? Might not so good. I'm just gonna be honest. I'll tell you next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DK customers. You can earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager when you use our code Lombardi, up to $2,500 in bonus bets your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now. Again, use that code Lombardi when you sign up. $500 in bonus bets for every $1,000 you wager. We're wrapping things up on this Monday edition of the Lombardi Line. And as I am looking through my final four predictions that we did before the tournament started, Michael, we know ultimately there are two top seeds that did make the final four. I unfortunately picked the other two top seeds that did not last. So my final four is looking bleak. It is ugly. I went over. I had Auburn, North Carolina, Creighton, and Houston. We are toast. Meanwhile, you and Elliot both got two in. So I'm like the odd man out here. Congrats on getting two in the final four. You had UConn and Bama both making it this far.
You know, and I had Kentucky and Creighton, too. And my logic was simply I thought Kentucky would be like Alabama. They'd get hot because they could score. I didn't anticipate that they were just going to melt down in the first round and not be able to kind of make their way. But against against Mercy or the Oakland, I'm sorry, yeah. I had Mercy on the brain. And so the logic I used to put Alabama in, I thought Alabama was in a bracket that they could score their way through it. And I thought the same thing with Kentucky. Now, I'm disappointed I didn't put Purdue in because I kind of felt like Purdue, this is kind of the Purdue's time. And you could see their focus and their kind of concentration. You know, that's the one I really messed up on. Where I really messed up on is I had North New Mexico State beating Clemson to start this whole thing off. And Clemson was way better than I thought they were.
Yeah, I had New Mexico in that one as well. Another disappointing tournament for the Mountain West outside of San Diego State, who made the Sweet 16 again. But Elliot shared your sentiments on UConn, and he did have Purdue in there. But I don't think that pick was based on him genuinely believing they would get to that point. I think that was the Homer's mentality. But it's okay. He still got it in there. He, like you, also had Kentucky, and he had Arizona coming out of the West. I genuinely... And kudos to you guys both for saying UConn is going to be operating at a different level. They had their bad loss. They got that out of the way in the regular season, and they've been on a mission ever since. I had so much false belief in Auburn because of how highly they were rated, how well they played in the SEC tournament, the schedule that you have to go against in the SEC, some of those teams. Like, they were number 4 overall in KenPom and number 5 overall in net ranking. I thought that they were just getting dogged in terms of the seeding. One and done against Yale. Cool. So that was a fun experience for me, Michael.
Well, they lost one of their best players in the first 5 minutes of the game, acting immature. That cost them, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, what happens to you, you tend to panic. You know, you get in these close games. Everybody expects Auburn. They read their press clippings. Oh, we're just going to come in there and these Yale, Thurston Howe guys, we're just going to beat the hell out of them and no big deal, right? And all of a sudden, you know, we're in a big game. And it became a problem, right? And I think, to me, that's the one thing about this tournament which makes it so great is, I keep saying it, you don't have to be the best team. You just have to be the best team that day. And that's going to have to be the prevailing thought if anybody's going to beat Connecticut. I mean, that's the speech that Matt Painter has to give. That's the speech that all the coaches have to get. Nate Oates, they all have to give this speech because, look, if anybody played a 7-game series against Connecticut, Connecticut's going to be the better team. But that's not going to be what happens. We're only playing one game, and we have to play our best game on that specific day. So I think it's just, this is what makes it so much fun. Like, I truly thought North Carolina would play better than they did. I didn't anticipate NC State. Who could have? I wasn't buying the momentum coming out of the ACC tournament, but obviously it was. And I think the Big Ten, the Big East was a good. I think St. John's still deserved to get in based on their ability to play as competitively against Connecticut as they did. And some of those other Big East schools too, right? Seton Hall beats Connecticut. Think about that, Stormy. Now, I know Creighton beat them on a bad shooting night on their own court, but back in December before Christmas, Seton Hall won. You know, they won by 15.
UConn, plus 360 to repeat as national champions prior to the tournament. Now they are around minus $2. I bought in after Auburn got bumped. I said, okay, I'll get a ticket on UConn. So I have 2-1 on the Huskies to win it all. And now I'm just kind of riding that out. We'll see how things prevail as the Final Four will kick off later on this week. But Michael, because this is an all football, all the time show, the United Football League kicked off its inaugural season on Saturday. And so, well, I loved even that we came on and we're like, okay, yeah, we can talk a little UFL at the end of the show. And you right away said, how about that 64-yard field goal? Like, there have been some really cool moments already just from this first weekend, because you see Jake Bates, who had not kicked a field goal since high school, because at the multiple stops in his collegiate career, he was a kickoff specialist, never actually got a chance to kick field goals. He kicked a 64-yarder back-to-back tries, made it in because he got iced on the first attempt. So we have a game winner there. And then in the game that I covered, San Antonio, Michael, had Brad Wing, former NFL punter, played for the Giants for a long time. He throws a touchdown pass to a 300-pound center, a 40-yard touchdown pass on his third read. And Wade Phillips is the head coach of the Brahmas. I was dying laughing after the game because he goes, you know, not only have I never had a punter throw a touchdown pass, I've never had a punter throw a touchdown pass on his third read to a center who was not supposed to be involved. Like, there were a lot of really fun moments this weekend. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, you know, my question to you is, how are the Patriots haven't signed that kicker tomorrow? When can they sign? Can they sign anytime? Right? Like, I mean, if I'm the Patriots, I'm signing that guy right now. Because, you know, look, they haven't signed a kicker. There's no way you could go in to next season where your team believes that Chad Ryland's going to make. Now, maybe he made him in practice. I don't know. But there's just no way you can have any confidence that he's going to do it. Right? You know, so I think to me, that's just not the case. So, yeah, that's why that league's there. You know, the more I kept watching the league, I watched the first game, the Arlington game, and I was watching Skip Holtz's team and Bob Stoops's team. Those two teams played, and we saw, you know, we saw Matt
Corral
from Ole Miss. Oh, heck, I got Matt Corral. Thank you, Stormy. We saw him mix, you know, he was kind of alternating, and then the quarterback got hurt. Martinez. There's Adrian Martinez again. I'm like, wait a minute, aren't you still in college playing at Nebraska? I was like, I mean, it's like unbelievable. Now he's in the XFL or the UFL. But, you know, watching the game, like, I kept thinking, if I were the NFL, why wouldn't I want this league to be part of the NFL? Like, this is the way to sustain the league forward, you know, and to have this kind of be part of the umbrella, because these kids can get the work they need, especially of a league with no quarterbacks,
Yeah, I think something that the league really wants to do and be is a feeder league to the NFL as much as they can, because sometimes there are guys that just need a little more reps and need live action, but they're on a practice squad where they don't get to play in a game. And so we did see, like, whether it's players, whether it's officials, there are a number of officials that were in the XFL a season ago that have made their way into the NFL. And from a technology standpoint, one thing that I do think is really interesting about the UFL is instead of, and it's just for measurements, but instead of the chain gang running out there and doing the measurement, they have like this visual spatial 4K camera thing that after the official puts the ball down and has the spot, they can just determine that measurement right there from a technology standpoint. And what makes it even better is if the official gets the spot wrong, we have a command center that'll call down and say, no, you need to move it here. So, like, that's something that's so simple that I feel like would be a great integration to the NFL instead of just like this old archaic chain gang that we have out there right now, day to day.
Yeah, I mean, that to me seems like a no-brainer. That seems obvious, right? And you being the sideline reporter, did you find that the spots were bad? Did you think it was kind of like not quite right?
No, they did an excellent job at it. And I'm not a scientist. I did not know how that all works and the angles and everything. But no, they were dead on. And upstairs, I don't know why I can't think of his name right now, but our leader of officiating, Dean Blandino, of course, been on the show, love Dean, but he's up there, and if he determines watching the replay upstairs that the official didn't put it in the right place, he'll say, hey, this is where we need to see it. So, like, it's such a simple thing, and there are a few different things like that the UFL is trying and testing out that I think could be beneficial to the NFL, and we're already seeing that this year in the test that they're going to try on the kickoff and see if that ends up working out.
I think, look, you know, if you watch something that works, then can make the game better, why wouldn't you do it, right? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you do it? Especially, you know, we're talking about the goal line. We're talking about spotting the ball. We know what the right foot, left foot, you know, they get that wrong. You get a good spot, bad spot. So I loved it. I really enjoyed watching it, Stormy. I really did.
Oh, thanks. Last 10 seconds, Michael. Who you got, LSU, Iowa women tonight?
I think I'm going LSU tonight.
Okay. All right. I think I might be riding with you. Although I know the people want Caitlin Clark. I think LSU gets it done. Enjoy the action tonight, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.